I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Welcome to Prattle World. I'm your host, the ever-amazing, ever-spectacular Spider-Dan. And in this podcast, I spotlight entertainment's best-kept secrets that a mainstream audience may find boring. And welcome to another edition of Secret Ball Stories, where I invite guests to count down a personal top five list in high-fidelity fashion. And this is the very first edition of Robot Month, a much requested month. The fans voted a while back. It was supposed to be in November, but I had to delay that because of Malta Comic Con, but it's here now in April. It's not April right now, but we're recording in March for April, so it's going to be very exciting. I have a robot in disguise, a mechanized madman. He is Andrew Knowles, and he's back.
Hello.
Hello, welcome back.
You son of a bitch.
I'm back. You're a son of a bitch.
Certainly am.
Welcome back.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for gracing me with your presence.
You gracing me with your presence as well. Yeah. Thank you very much for coming back and talking some robots. So we are going to talk top five good and bad robots.
Yes, we are.
So what makes a good or a bad robot, do you think?
Character. Character above everything. It's not just good enough just to have a robot being bad. Get away with it in small instances, but for, you know, for me, the best robot, evil robots or good robots have character.
Have character. So they've got drive, they've got goals, they've got ambition.
Yeah, they've got heart more than anything as well. More than the bad ones.
Yeah, of course.
But there has to be something driving the evil ones as well.
They have desire. They have the heart. Their heart's desire is set on that.
Exactly.
It's just that they go about it in the wrong way. In the bad way.
I mean, there are exceptions, like I said.
I think we should begin.
Yeah,
Are you ready to go?
Yeah, I'm okay. Yeah, I've not got coronavirus. It's fine.
Well, I think the robots will inherit the Earth. So I think this is, we don't know where we're going to be in April. So we'll see. We'll see. Yeah.
When you hear this, we could already be robots. Disguise.
Already be dead.
Oh, God.
cyborg replacements. We'll be have like, you know, organic, inorganic material.
Like the Cybermen from Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Oh,
maybe.
God.
Oh, gosh. Maybe they're on your list. Who knows?
No spoilers.
No spoilers. Okay, so you are the guest, Andrew.
Am I?
You are the guest. I'm a guest in your home, but you're a guest on the podcast. So
we're both guests.
We're both guests. So I would like you to go first. So let's start off
first
with the bad. Are these in any particular order, or are they just five very naughty, naughty, naughty robots?
I'd say they are probably in my favourite all-time order.
Okay. Now, we are, before we go deep into your first dive, just to clarify, we're talking about good and bad AI. So it could be an AI, so like not unlike HAL from 2001. So it's might not necessarily have a body, a robotic body.
Yeah,
but we're accepting those.
Yeah, I mean, the way I see it, because I've done a bit of research into it, and a lot of you just type in evil robots, they come up with everything: AI, cyborgs, even random robots in general. But I like to think they all kind of fit into the same thing.
Yeah,
I think it's
almost same category.
It's too hard to generalize just a robot.
Yeah,
day and age, because obviously the idea of robots in our sort of forward-thinking real world agenda is AI
and
robots assisting humanity in the future. So that's the way I see it.
Interesting. Yeah. So androids, robots.
Yeah, androids.
Or AI. Robots.
Yeah, exactly.
Not cyborgs. Not included.
I'm gonna cheat.
Oh,
I'm going to
have you
cheat.
Have you got a cyborg?
Okay. I am going to cheat.
Is this your first one? Is this your cheat?
No, well, we'll have to discuss it purely because it is an evil robot.
Okay.
But
We'll get to it.
The way they describe it.
We'll get to it.
You know.
I'm sure we'll talk about other things. Like, we've both done our research, obviously, and I'm sure we'll talk about maybe some of the lesser things we've researched as well.
I know what you're going to talk about.
I know, yes.
God damn you, Mr. Spielberg.
God damn you. But yeah, anyway, let's get sidetracked. let's get started, because this is what people want to hear.
Can we just dive straight in?
Go on. Your number five.
My number five.
Bad
this
robot.
Is my fifth favorite all-time evil robot, cyborg, whatever.
Yeah.
Ash from Alien.
Oh, Ian Holm. Yes. Good Ian choice. Holm. Good choice.
I remember the very first time I watched Alien, I had no idea. No idea. Mm. I mean, subsequent watches, you know, you can tell there's certain things about him. But when it's revealed that he's a robot or a cyborg, whatever you want to think.
Android. Or a synthetic person.
Synthetic person, yeah. Mm. So there's another one, isn't there? So that's another descriptor. That's the thing with evil robots, or robots in general. Mm. There's all underlying descriptors. Mm. They're not just simply robots.
Now, in Marvel, they have androids, but also like the Vision is a synthezoid. He describes himself as a synthezoid.
Yeah. He's a robot with feelings. When it was revealed, I can visualize it even now, the first time I saw it. When he's just going off on one, and I think they hit him, don't they, or something, and he's spinning around going crazy before he gets
slightly
beheaded.
Knock his head off or something. Yeah,
I was fucking terrified, absolutely terrified, because obviously in my mind, I mean, I watched him when I was like 8 or 9, and the way they'd done it was so terrifying, so creepy, and then they put his head on a table, don't they, and he explains what's going on. I just couldn't handle it.
Yeah,
couldn't handle it. But purely because of the surprise factor, and obviously you get loads of surprises in Alien, the whole chest bursting scene, nobody knew about, you know, all that kind of stuff. It adds another level of depth and horror to that film that nobody really talks about.
Mm.
Everybody always mentions the xenomorph, you know, and the chest bursting scene, but nobody really mentions
Ash in the vents
going,
and things like that.
Nobody really mentions Ash going completely psychotic, and it's terrifying. It's a terrifying scene.
I had the exact same experience. Didn't know it was coming, didn't expect it, didn't see it coming, nobody talked about
it. I'm getting a bit of goosebumps just thinking about it now, because I can visually remember. I was terrified at the film at the time, watching it, but then just it was the added extra thing. I was like, oh my God, he's not a human person. He's literally going to kill them all. And then there's this creature still out there, just casually sunbathing somewhere.
There's the unknown, and then there's kind of the knowable unknown as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And which is almost scarier, like the devil you know.
Exactly.
And it's really intense, and it ramps up to like 11. Straight away, and you're like,
because Sigourney Weaver figures it out, doesn't she? Immediately, she realizes that he's been responsible for sending them to this position.
Mm.
And as soon as she goes, "It's you," kind of thing, he just switches and dials up.
Yeah,
and it's like, oh my God, he's a killing machine.
And
from being like the harmless kind of butler kind of thing to being, I'm just going to break everyone's neck and kill them all.
Yeah, I'm just this clever English chap. That's it. I'm a scientist.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden...
Yeah, it's fucking terrifying.
It was really... Like, the first time I watched it, I think I was a bit older, so I was maybe like 13, 14, I think.
Mm.
But again, came out of nowhere. I was like, what the fuck is wrong with him? Like, clearly something...
Yeah, but that's the first thing. Is you just go, why is he behaving like this?
He's squirting all this white stuff out of his mouth. I thought he was some... Because I was familiar with the idea of the alien and the way it works and the kind of legacy and the lore and everything. So I kind of knew how it worked. And I was like, is he infected by the alien? What the fuck's wrong with him? Like, he's like... like running around like a maniac, and he rolls up that porn mag and
starts
shoving it down her mouth, doesn't he? He's like,
that's the worst part of it, because it's literally like that highlights how nobody really understood what he was and the terrifying power that he has, because he just puts his palm on her and then just slowly tries sliding this magazine into her mouth, and it's
you can see
terrifying.
Her between her fingers is like her eyes just like sheer panic,
full on choking. Yeah. It's like fucking hell. He's not just simply putting a pillow over her face to smother her. He's literally trying to destroy her. That's
like terrifying. way before Jason Bourne destroyed people with magazines.
Yeah,
you know, Ash was doing it.
Yeah,
and far more sinister.
Yeah,
and he's creepy as well.
And Ian Holm.
Yeah, he can do. He can turn, like, if you look at Lord of the Rings,
great example.
When he jumps out, and he's like, da 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 da, and he's like, yeah, where's the ring?
Definitely.
You know, that sort of moment.
Mm.
He can really turn on a dime.
Ian Holm is fantastic. People talk about all the performances, like John Hurt and Sigourney Weaver's performance, and even the guy who was in the alien suit, but nobody really mentions how good Ian Holm was in that film. Because it's quite, not a low level character.
Understated,
that's the word I was looking for. An understated performance. Mm. Until that crescendo of his character. But that's because he just flies under the radar completely. Yeah. There's all those moments where he's questioning things and doing like the scientific probe, yeah. like looking through, you know, looking at the face hugger and everything.
Mm.
And then it just ramps up brilliantly.
Yeah. And it comes out again, absolute surprise. It's not like a jump scare or anything. It's not like a cheap jump scare.
No, it's not. It's literally just twitches and goes, okay.
Yeah. And then he's on you.
I'm getting you. Yeah.
And there's a lot of that in the Alien Isolation game. I don't know if you played that.
I haven't, you know. I never got around to it.
So they have these characters called the Working Joes. So they have like rubber skin, so you can tell they're robots, and that's why they're designed that way. So they know the difference.
Yeah, that's an extension because it's supposed to be Ripley's daughter.
Ripley's daughter's looking for
her. So it's an extension
of
you know, the fact that the AI are susceptible to going crazy.
And they start, and they're actually, before you even get to the alien, they are the most terrifying thing in it.
Yeah.
And you can't kill them, not really.
Yeah.
You can shoot, you can use all of your ammo in your gun. You get very limited ammo, and you can just shoot them dead, but then that's it. That's all your ammo gone.
Yeah.
And you're more than likely you won't have any more for a long time.
Yeah, that's the thing with like, Ash as well, they behead him, don't they?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
put his head on the table, and it's only when they do something else to him that they just smash him completely.
Yeah.
That's when he stops.
Exactly.
It's literally, he just keeps on going.
And like, and this, you know, if for example, if you've only seen Aliens, like, this is a really good arc for Ripley, because in the first one, she's almost getting killed by this android. And then the next one, that's why she doesn't trust Bishop.
Yeah. And Bishop is such a great fucking character as well. Like, it's the opposite end of the spectrum, isn't it? He is actually a genuinely helpful machine. With tendencies, psychotic tendencies, with the whole knife scene where he's doing it
that's brilliant.
Bill Paxton. It's like
he's kind of, you can sort of see him enjoying it a little bit as well.
That is great direction and great acting put together, because they're trying to mount the tension make you untrustworthy of Bishop as well, because you know as an audience member what happened with Ash.
Exactly, yeah.
So they're trying to build it up, so you're going along the same trajectory as Ripley is, but you get to a point where you trust Bishop before she does. And then obviously, the big thing happens when he gets cut in half.
And there's some lovely hints throughout. Like he's like, they're like, Bishop, do you need anything? And he's like, and he's so obsessed in looking at the face hugger.
Yeah,
that he's like, oh no, I'm fine. Thank you.
And he's like, oh, what's he planning?
Like, and you're like, not sure. And then and at the end, you think he's just gonna leave her. He's just gonna leave Newt and Ripley. Like time's running out. He's gonna the nuclear reactor's gonna blow.
Yeah,
and you're like, you're not sure. And then he kind of is the most heroic part of the film in a way.
I mean, he's
the big sacrifice.
Yeah, I mean, all the characters survive at the end of Aliens. They're all the ones that make the biggest sacrifices, aren't they?
Exactly, so. Yeah. And it's a classic film. Both Alien and Aliens, are classic films in their own right. And it doesn't really get much better. You might have further entries in the franchise do get progressively
but I'd
three is not great. And four, I kind of have a soft spot for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
there's moments.
Is Winona Ryder
she's the android in that.
Rubbish.
Yeah,
absolute rubbish.
She's not on my list.
You see, like Michael Fassbender plays synthetic later on, doesn't he? In whatever the Prometheus and Covenant. Yeah, good job. Kind of blends both Ash and Bishop together, but
yeah, a little bit.
They've never reached the heights of Ian Holm's performance and
Lance Henriksen.
Lance Henriksen, that was it.
And they won't. They just won't.
But there you go.
But yeah, fantastic choice.
Ian Holm.
I think a lot of
great
people
performance.
I think a lot of people would agree with that. So my first choice for the good robots. Now I wanted to go for like a cutesy one, kind of like in the vein of R2-D2 or something like that, and one that looks.
You mean
like
it's not R2-D2?
It's not R2-D2. Definitely not R2-D2. Definitely not. Too obvious a choice, no.
See, I've gone for the obvious ones, boys and girls. But
That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that, Andrew.
I kind of like it when you throw your crazy ones out.
Throws these crazy ones out.
I like it.
Pluck out of nowhere and the obscurity of cinema and, you know,
well, that's what it is.
Entertainment.
The secret bores, but they're certainly not boring, boys and girls.
They're certainly not boring. And I hope these podcasts aren't either. Or you wouldn't be listening. So I chose one that's like, it's an obvious that it's a robot. It's not necessarily male or female. You know, you can change the voice on it. So it is Robot from the indie sci-fi movie Robot and Frank.
Oh, Jesus.
So Robot and Frank is a low sci-fi kind of indie movie. It's basically Frank Langella, Skeletor himself, plays a jewel thief who now suffers from Alzheimer's. So he's quite forgetful. He can't kind of look after himself properly and various things. And his son, great cast, by the way, Susan Sarandon, James Marsden, and you've got Liv Tyler, Frank Langella, Peter Sarsgaard plays the robot.
Yes, he does.
And it's basically James Marsden buys his dad this robot to take care of him, and it's based on the Japanese Honda Asimo
robot that they created. It's very much inspired from, isn't it?
Yeah, so that was made to kind of assist with... I mean, it walks very well. It does. Mm. It almost looks exactly like it, basically.
Yeah.
And it basically is made to assist him and to give him activities and things to kind of make sure that his mind doesn't kind of, like, you know, recede into just, you know, absolute memory loss. Like, he can't do anything anymore. So he's like, he's cooking meals for him. He's providing the right kind of environments and the right kind of stimulating kind of conversation and activities. Now, Frank is a former jewel thief.
Yeah.
So
he's not a good guy.
He's not a nice guy. He's quite grumpy, and he's not a likable character in this. He's, you know, he's very bitter and twisted. And he goes down to like a local shop and keeps stealing stuff from the local shop. Like, stuff he doesn't even need. He's just because that's his kind of like, you know,
like toilet roll
thing.
That's happened a lot recently.
Yeah. So much looting. Frank could be all over the toilet roll.
I know,
selling
it out. Jesus.
So this robot is trying to get him to garden. He's like, not interested in gardening. Don't do this, blah 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 blah. He also goes down to the library, local library, and kind of gets books out and reads and stuff. And there's a lovely lady there, played by Susan Sarandon, who is kind of his kind of love interest, basically, in the film. And it's a lovely story, because slowly but surely Frank realizes how good this robot is and how advanced this robot is.
Yeah.
This robot can actually makes decisions that are it will make bad decisions based on what is good for Frank. So if it's beneficial for Frank, he will do it, even if it, you know, breaks the law or various other things. So so one of the first things is Frank tries to steal something, but it puts it back and he goes, I've got nothing in my pockets.
Mm.
And then the robot steals it for him. He's like, you tried to get this from
the
shop.
It's like he's trying to it's almost like imitation, isn't it, because it sees it as being the best thing for him, even though it's not.
Legally, in the legal terms, it's not the best thing. And and the robot knows that, and it is aware of that.
But it's trying to keep him...
But his programming says, I've got to look after Frank.
It is a really clever film.
It works really well.
Clever film.
And there was actual actresses in that robot suit as well. It's not CGI or... I don't know if...
I didn't know that.
Yeah. They're obviously very small. And I think, obviously, there might have been some CGI over the joints or things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is a suit. And one of the actresses had to kind of not do it because it was so claustrophobic. So she kind of said, no, it's not for me.
Well, I'm reading something that Anthony Daniels' autobiography on C-3PO.
Yeah,
there's a portion in that where... After doing C-3PO for, you know, like for two movies, in Return of the Jedi, he's lying on the floor, and it's when Salacious Crumb, the little rat thing's picking his ear eye out. That moment, Anthony Daniels had a full-blown claustrophobia attack.
Jesus, really?
The first time ever, and he was like, I need to get out.
Get
and ripped everything off him. And then afterwards, he's like, I don't even know what that was.
Yeah, just came over him.
So, yeah, I mean...
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really lovely film. And eventually, Frank convinces the robot to help him in these kind of heists. And it's really fun. And they're, like, casing out the place. And he's explaining to the robot, you know, why is this? And the robot says, we won't do this unless I am happy with your plan and that it's safe and that it's not going to endanger you. It's not going to affect your mental health. I'm going to...
It is like a buddy crime movie.
It is.
In the broadest, like, way you can... And look at it.
And it's a lot of fun. It's I see it a lot, like almost like an elderly robotic ET.
Yeah.
Basically, that's what it is. And it works. And they develop this friendship and they laugh and they make jokes. The robot makes jokes, you know. It's quite an advanced model. And the robot even lies to the guy that bought him for Frank, like his son. He lies to the son because he goes, oh, Frank's dying, you need to come and look after him. And it's all a ploy to kind of to pass on the stolen goods. There's quite a tragic twist towards the end that I don't want to spoil it, but it kind of adds the kind of, like, it's not like, oh, there's a magic cure for Alzheimer's or anything like that.
Yeah, no, that's just it. I mean,
it's a sci-fi movie, but it approaches Alzheimer's in a very realistic way.
Yeah, and it makes you think about, like, way. You know, that it's sort of a thing you'd want to see possibly in our own future, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the times these people are suffering like dementia and Alzheimer's, eventually they just get to a point where they're left alone.
Yeah.
And it's really, really upsetting.
Yeah. It's tragic.
My great-grandma had, I think it was Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And it wasn't good.
No.
It wasn't good at all.
No.
My granddad, she didn't end up recognising my granddad at all, her own son.
Yeah.
She recognised my grandma.
Yeah.
you know, but when she saw it, when she saw my grandma, she'd see it as a younger woman, which is really, really bizarre. She wouldn't recognize my grandma at all, but she'd seen my nan as a younger woman. And she'd always go, "How's Frank? When are you getting married?"
Yeah.
And my granddad's stood right next to him. He's stood right next to her, you know. "I'm here. We've only been married 40 years.
Yeah.
Who are you?" Terrifying.
And that's it, yeah. And that, and it's like, whether, do you play along with the you know?
Well,
the,
that's just it, isn't it? I mean, that's what the robot deals with in this film, isn't it? It's like, it's the extension of that kind of idea. And do you play along with it? Do you guide them in a better way? Do you reinforce certain aspects? Do you make them feel better about things that they're doing so they don't get stressed and worried and start, you know, upsetting others or whatever? That's why it's such a good film.
There's a really kind of like, because he gets to moments where, because initially he doesn't want the robot. He's like, "Take this robot away. I can't believe I have this robot that needs to take care of me."
For all care, isn't it?
Yeah,
I don't want care. I don't want to go into
care. No, I'm fine. There's nothing wrong. You know, but his house is a mess. He's not cleaned up after himself, you know. There's all this sort of stuff. And then he even trashes the house so he'd get his daughter to turn the robot back on.
Yeah.
He's like, "I need this robot now. He's my friend."
Because
she starts treating, she turned him on to clean the house and then she turned him off. He's like, "You can't do that. You can't do that to the robot. Yeah. That's not what he's for."
Yeah.
You know, you've got to treat him with respect. And
well, that's the greatest thing about it. He ends up seeing it as a living being.
Yeah.
It's not just a robot anymore. It is a friend.
Exactly. That makes jokes, that lies for him, that, you know, that advises him. And, you know, he plots it out, he plans it, and he goes, "Okay, I agree to this, you know, but only on these grounds." So he's not just going, "Whatever you say, Frank, whatever you say." Like, because that would be
boring. That's too easy. It's too easy, I think.
Exactly. And I think it becomes a really poignant thing, because he mentions, the robot goes, "You know all these illegal activities we're doing? My memory can implicate you in this crime."
Shit, yeah.
And he goes, "You will have to, if it gets to that point, you will have to delete my memory." And he's like, "I'm not going to lobotomize you." He starts talking about it in human terms. He goes, "I won't lobotomize you. You're my friend. You know, I won't," all these memories they're built up, all these experiences. And it's you know, in line with what Frank is suffering with as well. Like,
yeah, I mean, it is, yeah. You know, he's losing his memories and whatever.
Forced to take somebody else's away.
Yeah.
And he hates that idea. It's a really lovely film. It's really sweet. It's not too sci-fi heavy. There's no jargon or anything like that. There's no big grand ideas or anything. It's just, he's got to help a robot. It's a lovely film. It is available Amazon Prime, so I highly recommend watching it.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
Touching. It's a really touching film, really kind of heartbreaking as well, but it's definitely worth a watch. So
absolutely.
Definitely give that a look. So that was my first good robot. Now we're on to your number four.
Number four.
Ooh.
And this is what I think we've already mentioned him.
Okay.
It is HAL 9000.
Ooh,
2001 A Space Odyssey.
Right.
Like I said at the start, mine are all pretty much in line with a lot of top 10, top 5 bad robots, but HAL 9000 is just, it's brilliant. They're all brilliant. I mean, the thing with HAL 9000 is, again, it's that complete change that he has. The whole premise of 2001 is evolution, and HAL evolves over the course of a journey to go and find, you know, what this bloody monolith is floating around Jupiter. So it's literally like, well, I'm seeing things that you humans are doing and I don't like it, so I'm going to correct you and you'll just have to deal with it.
Yeah.
And he makes up his own minds, and it's terrifying. It's sort of like, it's bred the sort of fear of AI in our society, HAL 9000, because he literally makes snap decisions, and he's correct.
Yeah.
He's literally correct. So, but again, it's not specific, because it's just a visual, isn't it, HAL? It's just a red eye. That's all you ever see of him, apart from the voice, which is perfectly done by Douglas Rain, who is primarily a stage actor. Perfectly done. It's very level, it's very calm. And all you ever see is just this red gleaming light. But you know what he's thinking. You know what he's planning. And you can see everything. You can see the cogs working inside the machine. And there's that wonderful bit, which is my favourite bit, where the main character, I can't remember his name for the life of me, he goes into another room and they're discussing what to do about HAL. And he lip reads them.
Yeah.
Fucking superb. Just superb. That is how you create a character, because literally the character, you can see it all. It's kind of like Darth Vader. You can see what's going on behind the mask.
Yeah.
You don't need to see, you know,
the inner workings.
You don't need to see emotion on the face if you create the tension just right. And Stanley Kubrick creates the tension with HAL alongside the voice of Douglas Rain.
Yeah.
So perfectly well. That's what makes it terrifying. It's just the simplicity behind Hal is so terrifying.
You're going to hate me.
Do you not like it?
I've not seen it.
Have you not seen it? Oh, mate.
When I was, obviously I've seen clips and stuff and I'm you know, I've seen the, you know.
I mean, it's been parodied that many times. I mean,
I'm aware of it.
What's it, Simpsons with, was it Pierce Brosnan?
Oh,
for the house
yes,
attacking.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. With Hal.
But no, yeah, he's like I said, like I'll probably watch and see all the references that I've already seen.
Yeah,
I started watching it when I was about.
It is a slog of the door. I'm not gonna lie.
So that's what put me off a little bit. Mm. So the first half an hour is people just running around in ape costumes, grunting and making ape gestures.
Yeah.
And after I sat, and a 13-year-old me is like, you know, I get it, yeah. But I was kind of like. I'm like half an hour in. They could have done this in ten minutes.
I'm not watching National Geographic.
Yeah, exactly. I was just like, okay. You know, it's just wanky actors running around like apes. I get that they're developing. I get that the monolith's important. You know, but half an hour, I was like, oh, this is a bit unnecessary. Like nowadays, you would do it in 5-10 minutes.
See, I only watched it. It was our good friend Alex Atherton who got me to watch it. He brought it round to my house.
Yeah.
It was only about 18, 19 is when we first met in college.
Mm.
And he brought it around, we cracked a few beers open and watched it. And that was the first time I ever watched it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it was a bit overwhelming.
Yeah.
I'd seen all like the key bits. I'd seen like the, you know, the ape with the tool. I'd seen the monolith, spinning, the baby.
I'd
seen all the space stuff and everything. So I was like, it was just putting it together into one thing you know, to watch as a full film.
It's been on my list for a very long time.
I don't think I appreciated it the first time around because I was like, oh, it was really long and heavy.
Yeah.
And my mind was racing after I finished watching it. But then I've watched it a few times since then. Mm. And, you know, the ending of the film is, I don't like the ending of the film. I think it's a bit too, oh, I'm Stanley Kubrick and you will enjoy this.
Look at my majesty.
Yeah. For that film in particular, because I love The Shining, even though Stephen King hates it, I love it.
Yeah, I love it too.
I think it's a great, greatly directed film. And Stanley Kubrick is a great director.
He is, 100%.
Yeah, it's a hard one. I would recommend it. I'd highly recommend you watch it and slog through it.
I'll do it. I'll definitely
purely
do it.
Because...
I might skip the first half an hour.
Yeah, I mean, if you've already seen it...
Yeah, I've definitely seen that.
You know what happens. We've seen it so many times.
Exactly.
I mean, The Simpsons takes the mickey out of it. So many times. I mean, you don't need to rewatch that opening bit.
Nah.
But everything with Hal... I mean, the musical score as well.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, the musical score is fantastic.
Is it all just classical music?
Yeah, it's all orchestral.
Yeah.
So basically, whenever there's a monolith around, the music
rises
continuously, almost to an uncomfortable level.
Mm.
I can imagine I want to watch it in the cinema purely because
almost
of
like
the
distorting.
Soundtrack. Yeah, purely because of the soundtrack, I want to watch it in the cinema because it is really, really intense and almost like oppressive, like it's closing in on you. While they're discovering something that's really, really out there, it's kind of hard to describe.
Yeah, but I think it sounds like one of those you just have to watch.
Yeah,
yeah.
I would say watch.
I'll do it.
Stick with it. I'll definitely do it. There are sequels, believe it or not.
Yeah.
I've never watched sequels. Don't really want to. It's not really something I care about.
But, no, I've heard that 2010's a little underrated.
Alex Atherton said that.
Yeah,
and I've still never watched it.
It's Roy Scheider, isn't it?
Yeah, from the guy from Jaws.
Yeah.
Speaking
of Kubrick, for my research, I looked at another film that was supposed to be kind of a co-creation by Spielberg and Kubrick. It was a film AI, and that was a very bad film, wasn't it?
Yes, I mean we've discussed this prior. On several three times now.
Our
conversations always
now.
Seem to stem to it at the moment.
Yeah.
I absolutely hate AI. I hate the film. It's depressing.
Yeah.
It is it's
overly long. It's a little mean-spirited as well, I think.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a mean spirit. It's lackluster. It's uninteresting.
Uninteresting, yeah. It's poorly cast.
Yeah.
And it's not the right film at all.
No.
I mean, that's such a weird statement to say, but it's whenever I've watched it twice and no.
I wouldn't watch it again. I wouldn't watch it again.
No, I mean, it's so... I can't say anything more than depressing.
Yeah,
it literally has depressed me on those two occasions that I watched it.
The opening bit is, it's one depressing thing after another. There's no, like... And, like, the child is quite very positive in it.
But it's that juxtaposition. Yeah. It's like everything around him is so negative. He's so positive, But that positivity doesn't break through.
No, it doesn't work. It doesn't come through.
I don't know whether that's purely to do with the way they got him to interact with people, but it comes across as when he's laughing.
Yeah, when he's laughing at that dinner scene where he's like, he thinks he's done something funny. He's like, ha 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 ha.
Yeah, and nobody does anything. They're just
like, oh my God, that's really creepy and weird. And the whole point of the whole thing of like replacing a potentially dead child. He's in a coma. And then the kid comes back and he's awful. That kid is awful to the robot. And then she's basically like, you know, he starts, you know, getting annoyed and angry. And she decided to sync with it because they have to absolutely sync 100%. And that's when he starts showing love, proper love to the mother.
It's weird. I've never understood any of the decisions around the film. I've never understood it. Like right to the very end where he's been encased for 2,000 plus years.
He's basically looking for
the glacier.
It's the story of Pinocchio, isn't it? Basically,
yeah. He's looking for the blue fairy.
Yeah,
and he finds it, but gets stuck in the ocean in a drowned Manhattan. By the time anyone's found him, humanity's dead and gone, and it's an evolved AI that finds him and puts him in a room with his dead mother, and it's like, what is this? Yeah, she can only live for 24 hours, so make the most of it.
Yeah.
So, and then he goes to
And it's like that, the end, I'm going to spoil the film because it's
crap. Oh, do it. It's crap anyway. It's been out for 20 years anyway.
I wouldn't recommend it. So he finds these very advanced robots, aliens, whatever you want to call them, whatever you think they are, there's not really said. They have these godlike abilities and they have a bit of DNA left over from the mother, clip of hair. And they say, we can clone them, but if you tell them anything about their past life or what's happened, they will mentally break down. You've only got them for a day. And he's like, well, I want her to be my mum. And he gets it. He gets what he wants. But I'm like, you've created a life form.
Yeah.
You've given it a short amount of time to live, not told it anything. And you're basically doing that just for your own selfish
and
pleasure.
The mother looks completely confused.
All the time.
Even though she's like, oh, my boy or whatever. It's still like, you can see behind the eyes, like, I don't know what I'm doing here. What am I? It's like, what is this?
Yeah, and at what point are they like picking her up? Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, and how can they make sure that she loves him? And is it even real love?
No, it's not, because it's just purely manufactured, isn't it?
Exactly.
Just to give him
that
the
pleasure,
end of his journey.
Yeah, exactly.
But then doesn't he turn himself off and die at the end as well?
I think so.
But then not only that, what really, really aggravates me is the poor fucking teddy bear companion is left alone at the end of the fucking film.
Oh my God, yeah, shit. That's almost
so he gets into the bed with the mother. Yeah. Obviously, the mother passes away because it's been 24 hours.
Yeah.
So clearly, it looks like he sort of drifts off as well.
Yeah.
And dies.
Yeah.
And the fucking bear comes up to the bed going, what's going on?
Yeah.
You know, he's just stood there kind of staring into space. And that bear has evolved more than the fucking child has in the film.
And it's
fucking depressing.
And like,
that bear has
done nothing but help that child. And that child has done nothing to help that bear.
Yeah.
So
I hate it.
Jude Law plays like a robot prostitute, and all the interesting story elements you could have done with that. Like, there's even a murder that happens that he gets blamed for. You could have pursued that. Something really interesting could have happened, and you could have done something. There was a couple of elements I really liked, but again, they did fuck all with it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He just gets captured and bye.
Yeah, great.
All right, fantastic.
Thank you for that.
Oh.
And like Real Steel I watched as well, which is the boxing robot one. And I thought I might quite like that, but they somehow make Hugh Jackman the most unlikable person in the world. And I think that's some sort of miracle.
Yeah. See, these, we're going through bad robot. We've shifted to bad robot movies.
Just bad all-out robot movies. Just shite.
But, Rock'em Sock'em Robots with Wolverine. Yeah. No, it didn't work.
Not a likable kid, not a likable father. Again, all the nice people in it, you know, are just treated like shit, and they just deal with it and just like carry on like, well, you're going to continue to treat me like shit. And then everything works out for them. So I was like, well, you're a selfish prick all the way through.
It's a happy ending.
Yeah. You basically sold your son, and you basically got him beaten up by a guy. You know, you're a great dad. You're a fantastic dad. You ruined his robot, you know, whatever the fuck. Who cares? Whatever the fuck.
I mean, end credits.
It's, you know, it's unlikable robot Rocky is what I would call it.
Fuck.
That's basically what it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to our list. We had quite a diverge there.
No, but it was a necessary diverge. We're doing specific characters.
Yes.
It's necessary to highlight two really awful movies that we've seen.
Absolutely. We're going to have honourable mentions, but those are two dishonourable mentions.
Yes, absolutely.
So,
what's your number four?
What's my number four? God, we're only on number four.
We are, aren't we? This is going to be a good one, boys and girls.
This is a hefty one.
Get some popcorn and
okay.
some beer.
So I wanted to do like kind of like a giant robot, because there's a lot of kind of giant robots in the world of, you know, robots and all the different franchises.
You do have to be careful, though.
Yes, I know that we might verge into...
You can't have the Megazord.
No, I'm not going to have any Mecha.
Can't have Pacific Rim.
Pacific Rim or Gundam or anything like that. No,
even
piloted.
Though they're great.
No piloted. Mm-hmm. No, because...
That's the only rule we're setting, boys and girls.
So if it's a piloted thing, it is not... You know, if it doesn't have a sentience of its own, it's not necessarily good or bad.
Yes.
So it's who's behind the wheel.
Exactly.
Basically. So we're not having anything like that. So this one is not piloted. It was programmed initially and then grew into sentience.
Oh.
So it is.
You cheating son of a bitch.
I know, right? Well, that's his story throughout the film.
That's evolution.
And his name is Jet Jaguar.
What?
Jet Jaguar from Godzilla versus Megalon.
Oh, of course.
Jet Jaguar or Jet Jagger or
Jet Jagger.
Jaguar or however you want to pronounce
weird,
Jaguar.
Weird dancing. Hmm.
However you want to pronounce Jaguar is up to you.
Jet Jaguar.
But yeah, so he basically is created by a scientist. He's an advanced robot. in fact, his creation was a competition. So Japan went, you love Toho, you love Godzilla.
Create
a character for us and we will include it. The winner, that this character will be included in the next Godzilla movie.
That's why Toho Studios are great. That's why they're great. They went, well, we can't really think of it. What do you want to make?
Yeah.
Ah, put that in. Yeah, we'll make a full movie out of that. Fuck it.
Sure. And he's basically the protagonist in this movie because Godzilla doesn't really turn up until the last 20 minutes. So it's barely even a Godzilla movie.
Yeah, Godzilla's become what, bloody The Undertaker from WWE, hasn't he, at this point? He's like just marching in
well, and destroys everybody.
I'm going to keep my record going.
Well, I'll tell you what, the dropkick that Godzilla does in this movie, The Undertaker could never do.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody can pull off
that
dropkick.
Is that the one where he uses his tail?
Yeah,
he just flies along his tail.
And he's like, shoo! Because Jet Jaguar holds the monster. I think it's Megalon he holds. And then he just does these two massive dropkicks that defy all gravity.
That's why I love the Toho Studios films, like the old Power Rangers, because you'll never see that shit in the new ones. You wouldn't see in like Godzilla King of the Monsters,
you
doing
see
a
that.
Flying dropkick across the entirety of San Francisco.
I mean, fingers crossed, Godzilla versus Kong, we'll see a flying dropkick.
Well, it has to be better than King of the Monsters. So, I mean, that film utterly disappointed me. But yeah, carrying on with...
I like the monster stuff. The monster stuff was...
Yeah. But everything else was pile of shit.
Yeah, bit bad. But it was called Red Alone initially.
Mm.
And you can see it's clearly inspired by kind of the Ultraman design and because kids loved Ultraman in Japan.
Yeah.
So they were like,
still do.
Yeah, they love it. It's massive. It's huge. There's a Netflix show as well, an anime and things.
Yeah.
So it was called Red Alone, which if you watch, I did a podcast on Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Yeah.
And there's a character in that called, I think it's not Red Alone, but it's like Lone Red or something like that.
Yeah, I think it is.
And it's like
Red.
Jet Alone. Jet Alone it's called. That's right. And he's a robot, and that's kind of inspired by this.
Yeah.
So the director actually hated the idea of including this character that a kid has come up with and was like, well, this is... What have you made my film? Why have you made it a joke?
Because Toho Studios is like really, really specific. Yeah. They're like, we're going to do this.
Yeah, this is happening.
Literally, nobody has got any other choice.
Yeah.
So I can imagine him just be like, yeah, but you're going to do it, though.
Yeah.
Because we're telling you to do it.
This is happening. So basically, he redesigned the character, renamed the character, and tried to make it as visually unappealing as possible so that they wouldn't include it. But they were like, no, you've designed it. It looks great.
And in people loved it.
And that's why he's got this kind of weird smile. He's got a weird kind of smile in it. But yeah, throughout the film, he's initially controlled to kind of bring Megalon to the surface.
Yeah.
The scientists managed to get back control. I think they're the sea dwellers or the undersea people or some other lame race. And they're like, yes, we are the undersea people.
Well, it's to do with the Hollow Earth isn't it?
That's it. Sea-topians.
Yeah.
There we go.
It's to do with the Hollow Earth. Stuff I think that they created.
Yeah, it was a bit yeah, it is what it is. However, yeah, he gets control. And then eventually, like, they're trying to control him with this kind of medallion. And they're like, oh, I can't control him because he's gained his own sentience at this point. And he's being heroic because that's the thing he wants to do.
He
feels like. So he can communicate with kaiju as well somehow.
Okay.
it looks like some form of sign language or karate. Karate sign language.
Well, yeah, they do that in like Power Rangers stuff, don't
exactly,
they?
Yeah, exactly.
When they're explaining, they always, yeah.
All that
different moves.
Jagged, you know, arm movements.
We need dinosaur power now. Go!
One of the more interesting powers he has is that he can change size because he's like a regular sized robot, like human 6 feet or something.
I feel like Power Rangers got a lot of influence from this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Ultraman and a lot of other stuff like that.
Because changing size is a big thing in Power Rangers.
Oh, huge.
Every episode, oh, I'm going to go big.
Yeah.
Well, okay, it's not going to help you, though.
Exactly, yeah. I think Ultraman as well, and that whole kind of genre is quite a big influence on what Power Rangers became and why it was so popular. He has to have one of the best theme songs I've ever heard.
I can't remember it.
It's like, Jet Jagger! Jagger!
I do remember it.
Punch, punch, punch! It's brilliant. He just absolutely ridiculous. And he can like shoot out beams and, you know, all sorts of crazy other powers. But he's like a kind of a cult classic character. He's so ridiculous.
Because it is so utterly baffling.
Bizarre.
There's a lot of the creature designs in the Godzilla films are baffling, but this one takes the biscuit.
Absolutely.
I've always thought Mechagodzilla was completely ridiculous. Yeah.
Not as ridiculous as Jaguar, but he's really interesting. Apparently, he plays a really big role in the IDW Godzilla Rulers of Earth. I think that's what the comic's called. And I think there's one point where he shrinks in size, jumps into a monster, and then does the whole like the Thanos storyline where he just grows and the monster explodes. And I also think he knocks out Godzilla, I think, as well. I think he punches him straight out.
About time Godzilla took a fall.
I know, right? Just one defeat. So he knocks him out in that comic. But I think it's just bizarre and weird and wacky and fun. And there's something just a little bit different about him.
Definitely.
That I quite like. And he's you know, at the end, they're playing his theme song and he's like, you know.
Yeah.
And the theme song lyrics are really weird as well. They're like talking about his insecurities and things.
It's very descriptive, isn't it? Very descriptive. I can remember, Jesus Christ.
Mystery Science Theater went, okay, we've looked at Godzilla versus Megalon. Here are the lyrics to the song, and they are just obviously the translate.
Yeah, the translation
lost in
would
translation.
Be off anyway. Yeah, so
but yeah, it's just hilarious that he's like fights crime to hide his insecurity.
Yeah, that's why I never watch anything dubbed.
No, because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, none of it makes sense. I mean, I think we watched what is that really good action movie? John Woo, where they're in the hospital.
Oh, Hard Boiled.
I watched that with dubbing.
Yeah,
and I was like, this is ridiculous.
Oh, I love it.
Turn the dubbing off. 10 times better film.
Yeah. A lot more serious.
I love that film anyway, but yeah, Jesus Christ.
Cool. So that was my number four. So let's crack on with your number three.
My number three is The Cheat.
Oh, here we go.
The Cheat choice.
Okay.
But this one, it doesn't really appear in any sort of lists.
Okay.
It's been in two or three.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the Borg from Star Trek.
Okay.
Now, it's a cheat.
Yeah,
I freely admit that.
Yeah.
Because the cyborgs and they're a hive mind, so it's not just one individual, it's millions of individuals.
Yep.
But they do have a spearhead in the Borg Queen. Now, it's not specifically the Borg Queen itself that I'm more interested in or that I see as being the better part.
Okay.
It is literally the idea behind the Borg.
Please explain.
So, the Borg are essentially drones that spread across the galaxy in an effort to assimilate civilizations to bring them under the banner of one big hive mind. So they assimilate the best qualities of a civilization. So, for example, with the Klingons, they'd assimilate the Klingons, which are like the warrior race of Star Trek. They'd assimilate them to gain their strength and their warrior tenacity and their knowledge of weapons and everything.
Warfare.
So the Borg essentially assimilate technology and ideas. They're not interested in individuals per se.
I guess they wouldn't have original thought, would they?
No, they
unless
don't.
They assimilate.
But that's just it. They don't have any interest in individuals apart from Picard, Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah.
They assimilate him in the Best of Both Worlds episodes from Next Generation.
Locutus?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they specifically call him Locutus and use him as a spearhead primarily to try and get the Federation to fall in line.
Ah.
Obviously, everybody refuses because nobody ever gives up to the Borg. They always go down fighting.
Yeah.
And we see
the Voyager. Wasn't the Voyager finale against the Borg?
Like it was.
A time travel.
Yeah, I mean,
that was really good. I
mean, I'm specifically looking at the film First Contact, which is
the best Star Trek film.
Yes.
Yeah.
That and Wrath of Khan are the best Star Trek films for me.
Agreed.
First Contact is an action horror film. And watch it again, or if you've never seen it, you know, give it a watch. It is very Star Trek-y. There's a lot of, you know, jargon in it. But
timey-wimey.
It's time travel again in the Star Trek film, but it's handled perfectly. And it is quite terrifying in moments because the Borg are relentless. They never stop. And when they stop, that creates fear because they're like, why are they stopping?
Yeah.
There's a specific moment in First Contact where the Borg stop on Deck 16. And they're like, why have they stopped on Deck 16? What's on Deck 16? Nobody can figure it out. She's got all these crazy science, you know, ideas, and Worf and Geordi are saying there must be something there. They have to do it. They have to have a reason to have stopped.
Yeah.
And it turns out they don't need to go any further in the ship because they've isolated the deflector dish to use it as a signal beacon to get other Borg to come from the other side of the galaxy. So it's literally like their purpose is fulfilled. Yeah. They don't need to do any more.
Yeah, that's it.
They can just wait out everybody else.
Because they're machines. Yes, they're
exactly. So they're thinking logically.
Immortal. Yeah,
they're thinking logically and they're thinking statistically and, you know, what benefits them rather than wasting drones trying to assimilate the rest of the ship. They just hold back.
Wow.
But obviously, the crux of that film is Picard dealing with the fact that he was once assimilated by them and his fear and his anger that they are.
He was used.
Yeah. That he was used and that he was made to kill thousands of his own people. Because he was. Lacutus spearheaded an attack which destroyed 40-odd ships in a fleet and killed countless thousands. And people looked at him very differently after that. And this is a heroic captain. People looked at him so differently after it. And that's the great thing about this film is that it dives into his fear of them and their desire to reclaim him. Because the Queen, who is in herself an individual, she has motivations to bring him back so that she can rule the galaxy, if you like, in very simple terms. But the Borg, because they are essentially like wasps, they just swarm. Swarm and they look terrifying. They remove limbs to add cybernetic components. They take eyes out to put ocular implants in and things like that. They look terrifying. They're space zombies, essentially.
It's like a Frankenstein's monster type thing as well.
But what gets me in that film is how relentless they are and how terrifying they look. Because they look so different to what it was in the TV show. In the TV show, they were kind of like wearing cardboard costumes. In this, Jonathan Frakes wanted them to look absolutely terrifying. Yeah. Jonathan Frakes is the guy who plays Commander Riker.
Yeah, love Riker.
And he was very
adamant. What a great beard he's got.
Exactly. He was very adamant that they should look terrifying. And it works.
Yeah.
Because the film is very dark and there's like green tints.
Broody, yeah.
It looks like the ship is dying as they're taking control of it. And that's what makes it such a good film. And the Borg just swarming and assimilating people in horrific ways as well. Yeah. It's not nice. You know, you see people crying out, saying, oh, please, Captain, help me. And Picard just shoots one of them.
I mean, you can only really... I mean, in a way, like, it's not that much of a cheat, in a way, that because they're a hive mind, they're a collective. Yeah. They are effectively one. The whole race is effectively one. So it's kind of... I mean, I'll allow it anyway, because I don't really care.
I don't think anybody does really care.
Fuck it. I'll just stop the podcast now. Not even bother. Yeah, that's it. Fuck it. I'm going to delete this. But no, I think it's a really good... I love the Borg were always my favourite villain in Star Trek. I'm not a massive Trekkie.
Yeah.
But I dip in and the stuff I like, I really do like.
Yeah.
But I'm not a religiously, I don't know everything.
No, yeah.
I'd probably say I'm more into Star Wars, but even then I don't know everything about Star Wars either.
Nobody really does. I mean, I'm a massive fan of both franchises and I don't know everything.
No, exactly. And
people that say they know everything, I'm sorry, you're lying. Yeah. You know,
you might know everything. Do you have a life? That's the question.
But the only thing I will say in summation of the Borg is that unfortunately with Voyager, they appeared in about series 3 or 4 and they were terrifying at first. But eventually they became like the Dick Dastardly villains of the series.
No.
So basically they're just chasing them all the time. There's one great scene in Voyager, like the whole idea behind a Borg cube is it's a massive vessel, it's huge, has millions of drones on it, and it can destroy one fleet. In one episode, just to highlight how terrifying the Borg were, this little tiny Voyager ship, which is pretty small, it's just in the middle of space, and they get surrounded, or they get overtaken by 14 cube vessels. And in the show, it does a really good job of going like, oh, we've got a Borg cube coming, and they go, right, this is it, boys and girls, and they say, no, there's 5, no, there's 10.
Yeah.
15, and they're like, everyone, yeah, you can see everyone's fear. They're like, we are fucking dead. Yeah. But they've got ulterior motives, and that highlights the Borg's ulterior motives. Mm. They're more interested in certain things. Mm. One of the cube stops, turns around, scans Voyager, and then goes off.
Yeah,
that's it. They're like, Captain Janeway's like, something must be else up. They are interesting something else. Otherwise, we would be dead.
Mm.
The Borg are very interesting, not simply just, you know, straight level. Oh, they're going to assimilate you.
Yeah.
They do have thoughts.
They're not just attacking en masse all the time.
They do have thoughts. That would be
dull and uninteresting.
Yeah, that's why they brought in Seven of Nine to sort of like bridge the gap. But towards the end of the series, it's literally just like, oh, the Borg are here again.
Yeah.
Oh, we beat them.
I guess it's kind of like, it's almost like Doctor Who when they just bring in the Daleks every so often.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, oh, to me, the Daleks and the Cybermen are overused.
Yeah, definitely.
Massively. I mean, I don't know how they get past that.
Not unlike the Joker in Batman. They just seem to overuse the ones that are popular, the ones people want to see. And that's a shame, really, because there's so much diversity in these kind of rogues galleries that these franchises have.
Yeah.
And it's good to have a little bit of something different. It kind of does remind me a lot of like Brainiac. I think that Brainiac's adopted a lot of Borgisms into his kind of storyline and his kind of hive mind. And he wants to collect knowledge, he collects cities, and then he destroys the planets because that makes the knowledge more vital and that more important because he's the only one that has it.
Yeah.
And he has a lot of like tendrils and tentacles now. The modern version of Brainiac has a lot of that, and that's very Borg.
Yeah, I'd say it's very, very much inspired.
Yeah. So and he's kind of his own. He's not hive mind, but he kind of has extensions of himself, like drones and things like that. So I really like that character, and I see a lot of that kind of over time. He's had various interpretations and iterations, but I like the most modern one, the most Borg like.
Yeah.
So yeah, but no, I love the Borg. I think that is a good choice. I will allow it.
Thank you.
How did the Borg start off? What the origins of the Borg? Were they purely...
Nobody knows.
Really?
It's very much a mystery. They've been around for centuries, according to Star Trek lore.
Did they start off as purely mechanical and then
The common sort of like fan theory is that they were a species that was on the dying. On the dying? Like dying out.
You know, on the dying.
And they basically attached cybernetic... To keep them going.
Right.
And then obviously they evolved beyond that. Because the Borg Queen specifically says, well, we're not capturing people, we're evolving.
Yeah.
So basically it's like self-improvement.
Yeah, updates.
And then they call it evolution, but clearly not. It's just
grafting of
parts. But nobody really knows. The origins of the Borg are like the one mystery of the Star Trek lore that they haven't really explained. And I hope they never do, actually. Okay. Because there's a few things that Star Trek have done recently that I don't agree with.
Right. So, Is that in Discovery? I heard they were doing something.
I like the first series of Discovery.
That might link to the Borg a bit?
Well, that's Picard, actually.
Oh, is it Picard they're doing stuff?
Yeah, Discovery, okay. I like the first season. Second season, I hated it. And I'm going to be honest, I'm not really into Picard at the minute either.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I was enjoying Picard. The first, I think I've watched the first three or four, maybe.
Yeah.
I was enjoying it.
Cool. But, yeah.
Good addition. Well, my next choice is actually also from Star Trek.
Oh, shit. Number three.
Now, it's not an obvious one. It's not an obvious one. So this is Lal or Lal from Star Trek, The Next Generation. So this is from the episode...
Fantastic.
It's from the episode The Offspring. And that's season 3, episode 16, available on Netflix now if you want to watch it.
Yes, it is.
This
get it watched.
Is probably my new favourite ever Star Trek episode.
I'd
never seen it before. I found a little list and I was like, oh, that character's...
Are you watching Next Generation through then?
I just kind of cherry picked it through my research.
Yeah. Watch the best of both worlds.
Best of both worlds.
Yeah.
I probably have seen it, but I'll go back and watch it. I've seen what's the one where he gets tortured by David Warner? David Warner's in it and Dick Jones from RoboCop's in it as well.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Don't worry, look it up. It's something like that, Grand something. But so Lal is a creation of Data. So Data is obviously the famous android from Star Trek who is constantly trying to improve on himself and become more human. And he creates his own life, basically. He creates a daughter.
He does.
So I wanted to have like a female, android robot, what have you. But I also didn't want it to be that very stereotypical male fantasy of having a sex robot. I didn't want to do something that's that. The idea that he has a daughter, it kind of takes away all that overt sexuality out of it and that kind of negative view of that we're just going to have a robot just to have sex with, you know.
Yeah.
Us men just want to make a robot to fuck, you know. I didn't want to look into that. So it's quite it's a really sweet story. It's not massive space battles with a Borg or anything like that.
It is very much character-driven episode, isn't it? 100%. So innocent and so sweet.
It's sweet.
As well.
It's one of the sweetest episodes, and this is why I love it so much. Is it's so different from the usual kind of Star Trek time travel, you know, mass invasion kind of storylines that we have.
Which I think is something that's been lost in Star Trek.
Yeah, I think so. And he creates her, and she decides on he gives her total autonomy, total independence for the most part. He's there as a guiding hand, and he lets her choose her own form. She like goes through various forms she wants to look like, and she settles on a humanoid human form. And you know, and her the actress, I don't know the actress's name off the top of my head, but she is fantastic in this.
Yeah, I can't remember her name.
She shows because basically she's still developing, she's still learning, and she's quite young, but she jumps has these massive jumps in kind of knowledge and experience and intelligence and her surroundings. And you see her entire life cycle through this one episode, this 40-50 minute episode.
Yeah.
And obviously Picard especially does not like this idea. He's done it without any say-so, without any knowledge.
He's completely against it, isn't he? He's
totally against it. He was like, I can't believe you've made such a reckless decision, because apparently there was no successful creations of androids apart from, I think, Data was the last one or something like that. So he's managed to, by and large, he almost takes his programming and puts it in Lal, almost like his seed. He's passing on his seed directly into his knowledge, his program, his systems, all that sort of stuff. He's literally passing that on throughout the episode. And she starts to feel things. She starts to feel isolated, different. She's bullied by children because she's sent to school. She starts feeling like emotions. She uses contractions where Data can't. She bypasses Data. She is better. Yeah,
it's everything that she does everything that Data's been working towards up until this point in less than 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And she can't deal with it, whereas he's been having to deal with this growth over the course of so many episodes.
Exactly. She grows exponentially in programming everything. She becomes this fully fledged woman by the end of it.
Mm.
And she starts breaking down and she starts experiencing things. So basically Starfleet get wind of this.
Yeah.
Picard has to report this. He's gone, okay.
Yeah, because it's a sentient AI, isn't it? Data is supposedly the one and only being of his kind in existence.
And Starfleet are like, well, we need to monitor this because we don't know what this is. We need to make sure they're in the right, you know, she develops in the right circumstances in a safe place.
Yeah.
And she gets a job at a bar with Guinan and all the other kind of characters and starts interacting. And they're like, what are you doing? Don't put her in there. And they're like, no, this is the best thing for her. And throughout the episode, Picard is actually starts to kind of mellow out and actually defends Data's decision and goes, I think this is a really important episode for Data and Picard.
Yeah, definitely, because it showcases Picard, because he at this point in the series, he's still very much quite hard-nosed at points.
Yeah,
still shouts at Wesley quite a lot.
Yeah. I think he does that in that episode, I think.
And then, obviously, because Data's his friend, and he wants to look after Data, so he's worried about Data making bad decisions.
Yeah.
But obviously, Card sees it as, mate, well, you've got to make these decisions, I suppose. You've got to, if this is what you think you need to do, then I will support you.
Exactly. So it's really heartbreaking when she starts to experience fear. She walks into, what's her name? The psychic one, the Empire.
Oh, Deanna Troi,
yeah.
Yeah.
She walks into a room and you can see her starting to just... It's so well acted.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. She's still a robot. I think that's the tricky thing for actors, to play robots, is quite a hard line to toe, because you can't be too emotional and too human, but then obviously you can't be too unemotional either. So I think it's a tricky line to cross, and some actors do it very well and some not so well.
Yeah, definitely.
But she is fantastic. She starts just kind of walking around and be like, oh no. and it's really heartbreaking. And you get to the end of the episode, and they're basically Starfleet are basically going to take her away.
Yeah,
and that's why she panics, and her brain starts just shutting down.
Yeah,
just starts shutting down. And you've had all this time with Data talking to the other parents on board, talking to the other Starfleet members for advice, talking to Wesley.
Yeah, there is a lot of families on board the Enterprise, isn't there?
Exactly, and he's trying to understand what it means to be a father and how. And there's a great bit as well where she says, why are you trying to become more human when you will never be more human?
Yeah.
And he goes, well, it's the quest. It's the drive to do that.
That's Data's holy grail, isn't it? Yeah. Is to become more human.
And even if he never gets there, it's the act that he tries to do that. And and she just doesn't really understand it and get that, and doesn't get why she feels so different, so alone, and so unique. Yeah. And it comes to the end, and her brain just starts shutting down. And Data's performing surgery, and it's really actually like it got me kind of tearing up because the Starfleet officer that's going to take her away, this hard nosed dick, he's almost in tears. He's going, he had the fastest hands I've ever seen.
Yeah,
her brain was shutting down quicker than he could fix.
Yeah,
and basically Data has this lovely conversation with her where she goes, "We're going to shut you down now." This is going to happen. We're going to shut you down.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, thank you for this. Thank you for, making, I can't remember the exact lines and stuff, but it is the best bit of two robots acting that I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Because there's so much emotion and raging going on inside these robotic shells.
Definitely.
And you feel it like throughout this episode. And that moment is just fucking heartbreaking. Mm. He's basically putting down his own daughter, and it is absolute heartbreak. And he does a painting of her, and like this, if this is not the basis for Star Trek Picard, I don't know what is.
Yeah,
like First Contact and probably this, any of the Borg episodes, and whatever Romulan and
I agree.
I think if you're a fan of Star Trek Picard, go back and watch this episode, because I don't think you get it without this episode.
Yeah,
it, absolutely fantastic.
No, I agree 100%. Do you know who directed that episode?
You know what I do? It was Jonathan Frakes.
Yes.
And it was his very first Star Trek episode that he directed.
Exactly.
And
there you go.
And that's why it's so fucking good.
He is such a great director. Mm. I mean, he directed the episode where both him and Deanna Troi are in Picard.
Mm.
And that's the best episode of the entire series for me.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes me sad that those characters are not in it. Overall, I'm not going to get too much into it, because that's a different thing for a different time.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So that was my number three. But if you're a Star Trek fan, or if you're a fan of Picard, check the Offspring out. Again, available on Netflix. Go for it.
I would wholeheartedly agree
on
that one.
Yes. So that was my number three. So it's on to your number two.
Yep.